Wishing you a very pleasant good afternoon, wherever you may be.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello?
2-2 and a wide shot down the left field line. That ball is gone! And the Rays win it! A line drive home run by Evan Longoria.
We're on to Cincinnati.
5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes! Unbelievable!
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sports.
Good morning, sports fans. It's the Sports Access. I'm your host, Peter DeFee. We'll get just right into it. Very sad news last night, or yesterday, for the whole day of Sunday. Kobe Bryant passed away. If you've never watched sports, you never watched basketball, you know the name Kobe Bryant. You know what he did for the Lakers. You know what he did for the basketball community, for basketball globally, as far as changing the game forever and just what he meant to so many people, whether you balled up your socks and threw them in your hamper and yelled Kobe, you threw your, trash away, yelled Kobe. I know I did that all throughout middle school and high school. So I know the whole sports world is hurting today, along with the 7 other victims, one being a very, very widely successful college baseball coach and John Altobelli, who really coached a lot of great names. A couple of them, Aaron Judge and Jeff McNeil, both all-stars this year, had over 700 wins, won multiple state titles, and was really world-renowned as far as his coaching abilities. I know our baseball coach here at Southeastern, where, if a lot of people don't know, is where I do my radio broadcast that I turn into the podcast that you guys hear on all the other platforms. John Altobelli, Coach John Altobelli, I'll give him that respect, was friends with my baseball coach here at Southeastern University here in Lakeland, Florida. So just to tell you the reach he was, on the other side of the country and still had that effect on our coach. So I want to express, our deepest sympathy to the Kobe Bryant family. Very tragic event that happened. He was just, going in a helicopter, traveling to his game with his daughter Gianna, who unfortunately also passed away in the helicopter ride, along with Coach John Altobelli, his wife, and his daughter, who was a teammate of Gianna, and then a pilot. They're reporting that there was another mother-daughter group there, as well as the principal. They have not stated if that was in fact the principal. There's just a lot of reports going on that it was in fact the principal. But still, 9 people died on this plane crash. It was very sad. I remember, getting the first text message about it, and, it was TMZ. And I don't know if a lot of people have, listened to TMZ or, watched it or said reports, but there's a lot of reports that TMZ does that, they're not very factual. They're not very, coherent as far as the storyline goes. They tend to flip the script a lot of times. And so I was very hesitant to actually take that information and say, wow, he actually died. I actually told my friend group. One of my friends sent the message in the group and said, guys, ... And the very first thing I said, I was the first person to respond, I said, nice try. And it was just, I just couldn't believe it because it was TMZ. I wasn't willing to take TMZ's word for what happened, because a lot of times they flip the scripts. They tend to report on a lot of different news that's not so much factual, like I said earlier, but I was going to wait for an actual report from ESPN, from Bleacher Report, from people not using TMZ as a source. And so at first, everybody was like, no, he really died. He really died. I was like, all right, I'll wait for ESPN or Bleacher Report to post it. You know, and everybody's sending me the New York Times, the New York Post, the Washington Post, the LA Times. They're all sending me these articles, but they all stated TMZ as a source. So I was still hesitant to say, okay, this is real. Until Adrian Wojnarowski, who is a renowned NBA writer and respected all across the NBA world, he is the guy that breaks trades, breaks free agency news, you know, all this other stuff. And he reported on it, but he still reported it with using TMZ as a source. So it wasn't until ESPN came out and actually confirmed it. It wasn't until Bleacher Report actually came out and confirmed it that I was like, oh my God, what's going on? What happened? So it took me a good, I want to say hour and a half to really grasp the fact that it was true that Kobe Bryant did in fact pass away, along with his wife Gianna, coach John Altobelli, his family, and the two other teammates that were on board with Kobe, and the pilot, of course, and the principal, which, you know, like I said, they still haven't confirmed, but that's what they're going with, that it was the principal that was on the helicopter with them. So, you know, I reached out to a lot of my friends. You know, I have a really big friend. I'm sure you've heard his voice before if you've listened back to the podcasts. But Julian Burke, who has been my friend since junior year of high school for the last 6 years, 6-7 years. He's a big basketball fan, and Kobe Bryant was his favorite player growing up. He was, you know, Kobe Bryant was my generation's Michael Jordan. You could say what you want about LeBron James being better than Michael being better than Jordan. Or excuse me, Michael being better than LeBron, Kobe Bryant was my generation's Michael Jordan. He acted like Michael. He played like Michael. He had the same swag as Michael. You know, he was the embodiment of 90s Michael in the early 2000s and in the 2010s. You know, winning 5 championships. So that was my friend's favorite player. And, you know, I had to text him. I said, hey, bro, you know, you good? You know, how are you feeling? You know, it was a very somber day for him. And, you know, once it actually hit me that he passed away and that this legend had just, you know, basically fallen from heaven. You put, you know, we think of these guys, these basketball players, you know, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Steph Curry, you know, Kevin Durant. We think of these guys as, you know, these all-powerful beings that nothing bad can happen to them. And then we just see things like this happen to them. I still remember when Jose Fernandez passed away. I just had the same feeling of being numb. Like, I didn't want to believe what was going on. And that was the exact same reaction. I mean, that's still numb. I still feel like I'm going to wake up tomorrow and Kobe Bryant's going to tweet out saying, hey, you know, reports were not completely true. You know, me and my eight other friends that were on the flight are still here. We still, you know, we're just badly bruised up. You know, I just feel like it's going to be a dream that they're going to have to retract everything that they said. And Kobe Bryant and his family is still alive. Coach John Altobelli and his family are still alive. The pilot's still alive. You know, there was a lot of reports saying that there was foggy outside and that, you know, a lot of planes, or excuse me, a lot of helicopters had already grounded themselves, but they decided to fly up. And I'm not gonna take that as a, you know, oh, it was their fault. Like, no, it was nobody's fault. It was just one of those freak accidents that just, you know, that just happened. It was the same thing with happened that Roberto Clemente and Thurman Munson. It was nobody's fault other than it was just a freak accident that happened to be with a legend on board. You know, because if this happens, you know, with just regular people, not to say that it wouldn't have been important, but with regular people, it's just a freak accident. But now, you know, everybody's going to come out and say, oh, well, they shouldn't have done this. They shouldn't have done that. He should have been more careful. Like, no, for the past 20 years, for basically Kobe Bryant's entire life, half of his life, and about all of his career, he took helicopters. And one of the stories I read was because he took helicopters because he missed his child's play one time. He didn't specify which daughter's play he missed, but he missed his daughter's play. So he said he didn't want to do that anymore and decided, you know what? I heard a lot of good things about helicopters, that they can get you, you know, within 30 miles in about 15, 20 minutes. So I'm going to do that. And living in LA, the traffic's bad. You know, you can be in traffic for up to 2 hours just trying to go 20 miles. So he tried this helicopter service. It worked out for him. He was able to work out, you know, do what he needed to do for the Lakers while still being able to parent his kids and still be able to be there for his kids. So this whole notion that, oh, they should have done this, they should have done that, like, right now is not a day to be talking about that. And then you saw all the tributes yesterday for him, a lot of people taking 24-second violations in the first, you know, 24 seconds of the game. A lot of people taking 8-second backcourt violations in tribute for the two numbers that Kobe Bryant wore, number 8 and number 24. You saw a lot of women's college basketball players that played yesterday honoring Kobe Bryant with both the names of Kobe and Gianna, his daughter, who was only 13 too. It's hard to imagine what was going on through everybody's mind when the helicopter was going down. But there was still a lot of tributes. There was a stat that I saw, or that Trae Young had last night. He had exactly 24 shots taken but that's a testament to Kobe's number. He had an 81 shot percentage from the free throw line. Kobe scored 81 points, and he was the first 45-point double-double with under 25 shots taken versus the Wizards since Kobe Bryant did it in December 17th of 2006. So you always have these weird phenomenons that happen in sports after a passing of a legend or a passing of somebody that played that sport. Like in Tyler Skaggs' case, when he died last year, they throw the no-hitter. You know, there was all these crazy stats, like there was 45 this, 45 that. The number that Tyler Skaggs wore was synonymous with everything that happened in that game. You know, they used, you know, Angels used 4 pitchers, you know, the other team used 5. You know, there's always that number that's synonymous with that player. And in Trae Young's case, 24 shots that he took, Kobe Bryant's number. He shot 81% from the free throw line. Kobe scored 81 points. He was the first person to have a 45-point double-double with under 25 shots taken since Kobe. So it's all these different things that come together at the right moment, at the right time. When Jose Fernandez passed away, D. Gordon had never hit a home run, a leadoff home run, and was not known for hitting leadoff home runs. It was not known for hitting home runs, period. And for his only home run of the season, he hit it the day after Jose Fernandez passed away. So however you want to take that, there's something that culminates in sports that knows when the sports world is hurting and knows, you know, when somebody needs to be lifted through the sport. And yesterday, that's what happened. You know, the Pro Bowl had a moment of silence for them, for the victims of the crash, along with Kobe. You can hear Kobe chants going on throughout the whole arena. Everybody, TD Garden, where the Lakers played the Boston Celtics in back-to-back NBA Finals, you know, they lit up their arena in purple and gold. The Knicks lit up their arena in purple and gold. Yesterday for the Grammys, last night for the Grammys, they had Kobe Bryant's 8 and 24 numbers illuminated throughout the whole night, which I thought was a very touching tribute. At the beginning of the show, they obviously acknowledged what had happened because they were in the Staples Center. And there was this tweet going on that really made me laugh and kind of made me mad at the same time. A lot of people were tweeting, please stay away from the Staples Center as we were getting ready for the Grammys. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, how dare you tell people that grew up watching Kobe Bryant? That was the house that Kobe Bryant built. Just like Yankee Stadium was the house Babe Ruth built, Staples Center was the house Kobe Bryant built. And they were telling LA Lakers fans not to mourn Kobe Bryant at the place that he built and tried to keep them away from the Staples Center. And I kind of just chuckled in my head like, yeah, okay, now you just made a million more people go to the Staples Center. So, you know, at one point I really had to stop watching the tributes on ABC and ESPN because it was just, you know, it really hit me about a couple hours later that, you know, dang, he's really gone, and everybody else that's gone. But at one point, I just had to turn off the TV, and I said, you know, enough's enough. You know, I'm gonna try to cheer myself up. You know, I'll watch a couple of video tributes for him. But at the end of the day, I was like, you know what, I can't watch anymore. It just got to that point where, you know, he was everywhere, and I was just like, I can't think about this. But across the break, we'll have hopefully some more, some better news. But Kobe Bryant, 41 years old, tragically passed away. We'll be right back on the Sports Access. Welcome back. This is the Sports Access. I'm your host, Peter DeFee. Two more things on Kobe Bryant before I move on to some lighter news, some happier news that we need to get through out the week. It was reported by Shams on Twitter that Kobe Bryant will be a first ballot enshrinement into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame class of 2020. He was set to be on the ballot this year. Obviously, he would have been in first ballot Hall of Famer, but now it is confirmed that he will be. Jerry Calagno, the Hall of Fame chairman, said Kobe will be honored the way he should be, and it's expected to be arguably the most epic class ever with Kobe, Tim Duncan, and Kevin Garnett. That's the first news. So Kobe Bryant will be in the Hall of Fame. It's kind of the same situation that Roy Halladay was unexpectedly put in when he died in his plane crash. Another plane crash that took another legend of the sport. And also Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban said that nobody will ever wear number 24 ever again. On the Dallas Mavericks, he said he's going to honor Kobe's legacy and what he was able to do both on and off the court for the sport of basketball. And I will assume that most other teams will take that route just like they did with Jackie Robinson in 1995 for baseball, where they retired his whole number 42 from across major leagues when he passed away. I'm sure a lot of teams will retire number 24 and or maybe number 8 for nobody else to wear other than Kobe Bryant. So, but that's the last on Kobe Bryant. I want to get into some lighter, happier news, you know, not be as somber today as I was last night before I went to bed. But Mel Kiper Jr. a couple of days ago released his 2020 NFL Mock Draft 1.0. I have also my mock draft. It's not the first mock draft. I've been doing it for a couple of months now since the season started, but I posted mine. You can find my mock draft as well as my friend Julian's mock draft. We have a Sports Access Instagram account. It's called Access Sports. If you guys want to find that, that's on Instagram. We post all the news, heartbreaking, you know, good news, bad news, whatever news is on sports. We post about it on Instagram. You can find that. And you can find my latest mock draft on there, which I will talk about a little bit because me and Mel Kiper, or Mel Kiper and I, whichever was the better grammar, I don't know. We both have similar top picks, but in the same sense, he differs in his fourth overall pick than what I do. But for his first overall pick with the Cincinnati Bengals, he has Joe Burrow out of LSU. I also have Joe Burrow out of LSU. There's nothing else you could say other than he's from Ohio. Cincinnati needs a quarterback. Probably the best college season ever in quarterback history. Joe Burrow had 60-plus touchdowns, responsible for 65, threw for 60. He broke about 20,000 records in this year's college football season, especially in the college football final. Won Heisman Trophy. He won the Heisman Trophy, won the national championship, and he will be the number one pick going to Cincinnati, unless Cincinnati trades out for him. But I would still suspect Joe Burrow to be number one. I don't think Cincinnati would trade. I know there's some speculations that maybe the Dolphins want Joe Burrow, so they would trade them. They would trade Cincinnati their three first round picks for the number one pick. But then in that case, Joe Burrow would probably still be number one. Number two, he has Chase Young, the defensive end out of Ohio State. I also have Chase Young, the defensive end out of Ohio State, going number two to Washington. This is the best player in the draft. Not Joe Burrow, not Tua Tagovailoa, not Jeffrey Okuda, not Andrew Thomas. This is the best player in this year's draft. There's no ifs, ands, buts about it. Chase Young is what Myles Garrett was when he was drafted number one. It's what Jadeveon Clowney was when he was drafted number one. Chase Young is going to make a difference on that defense starting day one for the Redskins, and this is a very good, solid pick. This is like a Nick Bosa going number two overall last year to the San Francisco 49ers, and you see what that happened and what that was able to turn into. Number three, he has Jeffrey Okuda going to the Detroit Lions. I also have Jeffrey Okuda going to the Detroit Lions. I think he is probably the best secondary position player in this draft. Maybe a Grant Delpit or a Christian Fulton could be up there. I think that's the top three right now in this draft class. But Jeffrey Okuda out of Ohio State, very physical defense. And the Detroit Lions just need somebody to fill in that secondary role. They have Darius Slay, the Pro Bowler. But they traded away another young piece last year. So to help out with Darius Slay on that, to help out Darius Slay in that secondary, Jeffrey Okuda would be a big time name to get in this draft and in the right direction for getting that Lions defense on the right track. New York Giants, this is our first pick where we differ as far as who he wants to go with and who I went with. So in his mock draft, the New York Giants are going to select Isaiah Simmons, the very talented outside linebacker. Could probably play a little bit of inside linebacker too from Clemson. He's a very good off-the-ball linebacker, very physical, kind of like a Luke Kuechly, where he's just going to get in that box and go and make sure that running backs can't have a chance of going downhill as much, make a lot of tackles in the open field. I have the New York Giants selecting Andrew Thomas, the offensive tackle from Georgia. I think the Giants could benefit from picking an offensive lineman. Nate Solder didn't work out at all this year as they wanted to. They have Daniel Jones, who is going to be their franchise quarterback, to go after Eli Manning. You know, we saw Daniel Jones last year, played amazing. You have Saquon Barkley, who, whatever the case may be, did not have his best year last year other than two of the last three games that he played for the season. So they need to get that offensive line right. They need to keep Daniel Jones up on his feet. They need to be able to let Saquon Barkley get those holes and get some big yardage plays. They need to be able to let these young receivers find time to get open, because Daniel Jones is a very talented quarterback and they need to be able to protect him. So I have Andrew Thomas. Mel Kiper has Isaiah Simmons. I have Isaiah Simmons going to the Panthers at number seven. I have him going to the Panthers at number seven because they just lost Luke Kuechly to retirement. So they need somebody to fill in that linebacker role. And I think Isaiah Simmons would be a perfect fit in that Panthers defense and somebody they can go from Luke Kuechly to Isaiah Simmons and not really miss a beat as bad as, say, using a second stringer to replace Luke Kuechly. Number five, he has the Miami Dolphins selecting Tua Tagovailoa. I also have him selecting Tua Tagovailoa at this pick. you know, the hip injury is not going to cost him to slip in the draft as much as people think, other than slipping from number one overall to number five. The Dolphins need a quarterback. Don't know if Fitzpatrick's going to be back. They obviously don't want to go with Rosen, even though they traded for him last year, which is I don't know. I don't know what anybody's going to do with Rosen. I think he's a very talented quarterback, but I think he's just not getting the chance to play. They will go with Tua Tagovailoa. So unless they don't go with Fitzpatrick and they let Rosen play while Tua Tagovailoa is rehabbing, I would assume that Rosen's out as quarterback for Miami, and so is Fitzpatrick. Unless Fitzpatrick comes out or comes back, excuse me, and Tua is, you know, is under the guidance of Fitzpatrick, which I don't know if he would, but the first three picks that the Miami Dolphins use, one of them is on Tua Tagovailoa. I'm only going to go through the first 10 picks, so I'm not going to go through all 32 and bore you guys, but the Los Angeles Chargers at number six take Justin Herbert. I also think they take Justin Herbert as well. They need a quarterback. Phillip Rivers is not coming back, and Justin Herbert, or any quarterback for that matter, who comes in would have a plethora of talented players around him, including Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Hunter Henry, if he comes back, and Austin Eckler. Melvin Gordon's in one more year of his contract. We'll see if he gets brought back for an extension or if he gets traded this offseason. I know he had a pretty decent comeback when he came back after week eight, but Austin Eckler showed that he can more than handle the running numbers that was put upon him this year. Keenan Allen, after a couple of shaky games, showed that he was still able to catch touchdowns and make big-time receptions. Hunter Henry, if they can bring him back, is a very nice tight end piece for Justin Herbert, who's a very big safety blanket for over the middle. And then you have Mike Williams, who can just basically fly by people. At number seven, Mel Kiper has the Auburn defensive tackle Derrick Brown. Again, like I said, I have Isaiah Simmons going at this spot. He has Derrick Brown, the very talented defensive tackle, who had been garnered to get But Derrick Brown is a very talented defensive tackle. I can't believe I just lost that word. Anyways, he has him going seventh overall. He's 6'5", very athletic, can get to the quarterback a lot, can stop that run game. It was a big part of Auburn stopping Alabama's run game in that 48-45 win. Comparisons. That was the word I was looking for. He has been garnered to get comparisons from Gerald McCoy and Bruce Irvin and all those guys who are free agents this year, but he could fill in for them wherever he goes in the defense. Number eight, the Arizona Cardinals. Mel Kiper has him picking Andrew Thomas, the offensive tackle. Here I have, I believe I had Grant Delpit, if I remember correctly. I have them taking a secondary piece just because I think they need more of a secondary piece. I had them taking Grant Delpit, the safety out of LSU. They need more of a secondary piece. That secondary got torched. They could use an offensive lineman type of player, and Andrew Thomas has been very good at Georgia. He was once considered the second overall pick before the Redskins dropped, before the Giants rose in the draft. And now at eight to Arizona makes sense because Kyler Murray needs to be able to stay on his feet, but he has that escapability to really get outside of the pocket and not have to worry about that rush coming towards him. Number nine, he has the Jacksonville Jaguars taking Javon Kinlaw, the defensive tackle out of South Carolina, another very athletic defensive tackle that can stop the run. Was very good at South Carolina. I have the Jaguars taking Jerry Jeudy out of Alabama. I think that would be a very good wide receiver piece for either Nick Foles or Gardner Minshew, whoever they decide to keep. Gardner Minshew had a lot of success in a couple of games that he was able to start. Nick Foles has been known to use a lot of his wide receiver targets as he did with the Eagles. They have Leonard Fournette, who's a very good running back. If they can get somebody that can make big plays, Julio Jones style, like Jerry Jeudy, I think that would be a win-win for the Jaguars. And to round it off, number 10, he has the Cleveland Browns picking Mecca Becton. I hope I said that right. The offensive tackle out of Louisville. This is for the Cleveland Browns pick. I have them just picking Tristan Wirfs out of Iowa, so it's an offensive lineman. Offensive lineman draft for the Cleveland Browns. They need to get that offensive line better. Nick Chubb can only do so much by himself. Baker Mayfield can only do so much by himself with having to try to escape. I don't know what happened to this Cleveland Browns team. They were projected to go to the playoffs. A lot of them projected them to go to the Super Bowl. So the fact that they're sitting at home right now at 6-10 was very shocking to a lot of people. And just to not be able to utilize that passing game as much with Odell Beckham Jr., with Jarvis Landry, with David Njoku, who was injured a lot, getting an offensive lineman, whether it be Wirfs or Becton, could really help out this offensive scheme, help Baker Mayfield transition into a better quarterback like he was his rookie year, because this year was just a very down year for him. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But yeah, I have basically the same as Mel Kiper Jr. I kind of differed a little bit. You can find it on Axis Sports on Instagram. That's our at Axis Sports. So that's the draft. I'm very excited about this year's draft because a lot of teams are going to be changing how they are able to play next year. The quarterbacks coming in with Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Tua Tagovailoa are going to be key parts of their team's success. We've seen what the young quarterbacks like Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, you've seen what they've been able to do for their teams. So to have a new crop of guys, we haven't even talked about Jalen Hurts, who looked good at the Senior Bowl. They talked about Jordan Love getting picked up in the first round. Now we have Jacob Eason, who could be a third-round pick or late second-round pick. You have Jake Fromm, who's coming out. So there's a lot of young quarterbacks that could find themselves in a position to put the team on their back. I mean, obviously with Joe Burrow, Tua, and Justin Herbert, that's going to be more evident because the Chargers need a quarterback, the Dolphins definitely need a quarterback, and the Cincinnati Bengals definitely need a quarterback. So we can see those guys coming in at day one, playing from snap number one for their teams. But around the break, or after the break, we will have some baseball news to discuss. A big free agent player just got signed today, and it's by a team that you probably thought was not really in the market for a free agent. So that's after the break. You're listening to Sports Access. Welcome back. This is the Sports Access. I am your host, Peter DeFee. Before I forget, you can find us everywhere that you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, anywhere. You can also follow us on Twitter at @_SportsAccess. You can also follow us on Instagram at Access Sports. I had to remember that you have to flip it on Instagram. You can also follow me on Twitter at SportsCasterPete. And you can, just follow us, interact with us, like us. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. But we have some MLB news to get to. Castellanos, as I forget his name. Nicholas Castellanos. I just forgot his first name. Nicholas Castellanos signed a four-year, $64 million deal with the Reds. This is another free agent that the Reds were able to scoop up after getting the Japanese outfielder Shugo Akiyama for 3 years, $21 million. I'm very bad at pronouncing names, so I'm sorry if it just sounds all, you know, jobbled up. But the Reds were also able to sign Wade Miley this offseason. So this is a Reds team that's looking to add on to the 75-win season that they had last year, which is a little better than what people thought, but definitely trying to look to improve that offense. Nicholas Castellanos signed the $64 million deal but has an opt-out after one season if he just decides that this Cincinnati experience was just a complete train wreck and that he decides to go elsewhere. But last year, he hit .289 with an on-base percentage of .337 and a slugging percentage of .525 with 57 home runs, and led the big leagues with 58 doubles and played in 151 games with both the Tigers and the Cubs. One of the big successes for the Cubs when he was traded over. I remember he was traded over, and it seemed like every game he hit a double. Obviously, he hit 58 of them. And over his major league career so far, which, get this, is pretty funny. He's played in 888 games. I read that and I was like, that's a joke. But he's hit .277 with 120 home runs. He has 229 doubles since 2014, which ties him with Mookie Betts for the most in the major leagues that time. But this Reds team who has Bauer now, who has Trevor Bauer, who just signed Wade Miley, they have Raziel Iglesias in that pitching staff. This is a team that's going to look to try to win very quickly. They still have Joey Votto. They still have Suarez for right now. But this is a team that is going to try to win and win now. They have Luis Castillo as a number two behind Trevor Bauer. They have Wade Miley now as a number three. So this is a rotation. I believe they still have Sonny Gray if he did not leave. Yes, they still have Sonny Gray. So the top four of their rotation can be very formidable this year if they can stay healthy, if Sonny Gray can pitch the way he pitched when he was traded over to the Reds, if Luis Castillo can take that step up. Besides that, they still have Joey Votto. They got Mike Moustakas this year. They still have Eugenio Suarez. Nick Senzel, their top prospect, is expected to make the call up this year. They still have Jesse Winkler. Like I said, they signed. I'm just going to call him Shogo because I absolutely butchered that last name, but they signed him from Japan. They still have Arstedes Aquino, who was up last year. And if people can remember, he had like the 12 home runs in like four games. It seemed like he was hitting 2-3 home runs every night. And they still have guys that can go behind him, like a Jose Siri, a Scott Schiebler, a Josh Van Meter, guys like that can funnel in behind those outfielders. Still have guys like Freddie Galvis who can provide veteran support along with Joey Votto and Mike Moustakas, who's most likely going to play third base again like he did with the Royals. I don't think they're going to put him to second base. So that means Eugenio Suarez, I don't know what happens with him, or maybe they keep Suarez at third and move Moustakas back to second base like what the Brewers did. But this offense should be a lot better than it was last year. Their pitching staff should be a lot better than it was last year. So this is a team that's really going to make a run at this NL Central title as far as being up there with the Brewers, being up there with the Cubs, with the Cardinals this year. And now you have the Reds that are going to be a little bit better this year than they were last year. So that NL Central could get very crowded at the top four. I don't think the Pirates are ready to compete yet again right now, but it will be a very interesting race as far as what happens. Other than that, there hasn't been a whole lot of free agent talk. I know Jim Crane, who is the owner of the Astros, said that the Astros during spring training are going to, apologize for what they did. I know a lot of people didn't like the apology that Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve gave, but they're going to actually apologize during spring training for what they did, what they caused, their actions. that it resulted in three managers getting fired and one GM getting fired. So they will officially apologize during spring training. I'm sure a lot of people are going to be still going to be mad when they apologize, and I would not put it past any of the pitchers in spring training that the first pitch of spring training gets a little too far inside, for Altuve's liking or for Bregman's liking or Correa's liking or whoever's up at the plate that starts game one of spring training. I would not be surprised if, the very first pitch finds itself a little too far inside, and I'm sure the umpire's going to know, like, hey, they're probably going to get hit this first at bat because what they did just was not right. But spring training, they will officially apologize. That's it for my show. I have nothing else to talk about. I know it was a little somber. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at @the_sportsaxis. I post a lot of the shows there. You can follow us on Instagram at Axis Sports. We post a lot of news that we couldn't get to on the show, or that, happens over the weekend that, we have to wait till, like today to get to. We post that on the Instagram page. You can also listen to us on you can also listen to us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcast, anywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, whatever. I've been your host, Peter DeFee. I'm going to end today with a 24-second silent tribute to Kobe Bryant as we remember the life of Kobe Bryant. Remember, this has been the Sports Axis. I'm your host, Peter DeFee, saying thank you.
Wishing you a very pleasant good afternoon, wherever you may be.
Omaha! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Kobe Bryant! Woo-hoo-hoo! He caught for human life!
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is.
You play to win the game.
Hello?
Cincinnati.
5 seconds left in the game. Over. You believe in miracles? Yes!
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sports.